This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Layla Mudin's our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She is available for consultations, as I am. And if you seek to work with her, you can do so long distance. If you're consulting from a place where it's a little hard for you to get to New York, although we welcome patients coming to New York and becoming patients at the Hoffman Center, we can then follow them up by phone. This is a service available to those who want to keep their doctor and just get an additional nutritional perspective. So go to drhoffman.com, find out how you can become a patient of the Hoffman Center, either with us both, with me doing the medical workup, or alternatively, just getting a nutritional perspective on your problem with Layla Mudin, who's a registered dietitian, has a master's degree in nutrition. So the question before the break, you gave us a preview of that.
Yeah. Michael writes, "Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, a recent test indicated that my HDL is 66, but my LDL was 132. No differentiation between good particle or bad particle LDL."
Well, hold it right there. That's a good point, because just an LDL number in isolation doesn't tell you so much about how bad that is. Now, officially, we're playing the numbers game, you know, paint by numbers. You're supposed to have an LDL under 130. And if you have heart disease, it should be under 100. And if you have multiple risk factors, or if you've had a heart attack or, you know, stents, they want it below 70. Okay, that's arbitrary. But we have to look at the whole picture, you know, and sometimes we'll have, I mean, for example, saw a patient today whose cholesterol was well over 300. She had an LDL that was over 200. But when I examined her, she had very good pulses and seemed to have good circulation. I sent her for a test to measure coronary calcium. Her HDL was 117. So my wager is that she has little or no plaque because of that very high HDL. However, her doctor had just put her on a statin, which may or may not be absolutely necessary. We'll find out. So, but let's say hypothetically, I mean, we're challenging, is this bad? It may not be bad. There may not be a problem here. But let's say you want to get your LDL down. That's a really good question. Is how do you get your LDL down without starving yourself? Say you're, you know, 5'8" male and you weigh 150 pounds. You don't want to turn it into a frail, toothpick.
Know, Michael is 72. We don't have his height, but he's 120 pounds.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And he's actually trying to gain some weight.
Sure.
But, you know, he eats a good, moderate to low-carb diet, good healthy fats. He's doing all of that. Yeah. And his triglycerides are only at 39.
Okay. Well, that's a good sign. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So we still need the particle size. But, you know, if we were gamblers, we would bet he's got a pattern A LDL.
Right.
Based on his diet.
Yep. Based on his diet, based on his body type. He's not diabetic. And
his triglycerides.
So, but let's say hypothetically we've got, I mean, he may not need to do anything. He may be just fine.
That's
and actually,
true.
When you get past a certain age, the higher your cholesterol is, the more likely you are to experience longevity.
Yeah.
So he's not quite at that age. And, you know, we might want to do an EBT heart scan to see, is he accumulating plaque? Do we really have to worry about cholesterol? Maybe not.
Right,
but let's come back to the original question. Is there a way to lower your LDL while you put on pounds? Or do you always have to lose weight when you're lowering your bad cholesterol?
I wouldn't think so. The most important thing to me weight gain or weight loss aside, is that it's the right particle.
Right. And so the way I would answer it is that I think that the best way to get your LDL up, to get your LDL down.
Down, yeah.
While gaining weight would be to emphasize protein and fat.
Yeah.
And I think we see that a lot with patients who have metabolic syndrome. Now, this guy doesn't have he's thin and he has a low triglyceride, which suggests he doesn't have metabolic syndrome.
Yeah.
But let's say, he was, heavier and we wanted to raise the, lower the LDL, raise the HDL, and get him to lose weight. We put him on a low carb diet.
Better particle, yeah.
We put him on a low carb diet, give him more protein and fat, and even saturated fat, and we would see probably the LDL either stay the same, slightly go down, the HDL might go up.
And with the HDL going up, I want everyone to be reminded that that changes to a more favorable ratio.
Yes.
You've got a bigger garbage truck now having a higher HDL.
Mm-hmm.
More, bigger truck to carry out the so-called bad stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's almost what Dr. Atkins used to say was, it's a wash. Now it's a wash. Because the HDL went up, the ratio is better.
Right. So, looking at the ratio.
Yeah.
Just let me throw in that there's another risk factor that has recently been discovered to be important. And we'll have to see if this bears out, but it'd be kind of handy-dandy if it turned out to be a very significant risk factor. In a major study, they found that a test completely different from looking at cholesterol or blood fats has a major impact on your cardiovascular risk. And that's something called IgG. Higher levels of IgG, immunoglobulin G, were associated with protection against cardiovascular disease. And that's interesting because IgG is about immunity. And if you have robust immunity, you may be protected from inflammation or some infectious process that promotes atherosclerosis.
Wow.
So, we might start looking at IgG as a marker. They have not done enough research to establish norms or, give us lots of percentages on if it's this, then you have this percentage or that percentage of cardiovascular risk. But a quick and dirty test for heart disease risk might be to do, it's a readily available test, maybe a $40 test, total IgG.
Terrific. Wow.
That's in the news lately.
Yeah.
But it did not get publicized very much. But,
So,
homocysteine, C-reactive protein, LPA, lipoprotein A, plaques test, myeloperoxidase, some people do as part of the Berkeley Heart Lab does, fancy schmancy testing sometimes for cardiovascular risk.
Berkeley Heart Lab, So, Michael, don't try to lower your LDL until you first know your particle size, get an EBT heart scan to see if there's any plaque at all, if there's a reason to try to lower that LDL or at least change the particle, if it's a small dense B pattern rather than a large buoyant A pattern.
So
that's the place to start.
Let me rephrase the question. Let's say we see this guy, and forget cholesterol for a moment, and he's 72. and he's 20 pounds, and he seems like, he's frail. And I see him, and I say, which is kind of the neat part of my job, I have you, so I just say in the note, when I pass the patient along to you, I say, could you please fatten this patient up? How would you do it? And so how do you do it? What do you say? You're telling me ice cream sundaes, French fries with mayonnaise?
Absolutely not. He'll definitely have a small, dense pattern B atherogenic pattern. That is a guarantee to happen.
So what's the trick to healthy weight gain? Because we spend so much time talking about weight loss, but we actually see a fair percentage of patients who are underweight and we want to build them up.
Yeah. Well, we do have, I know I have a minority of patients here who are underweight and can't gain weight and it can be very, very tough to do. We give them calorically dense, nutritionally dense foods. That might include a whey protein shake daily where we could add calories to it in the form of maybe some avocado, maybe some coconut oil, maybe some good quality organic nut butter, where we're adding some calories.
And you put it in the blender, and it makes a creamy kind of thing, right?
Right.
People don't realize how good avocado tastes in a shake. Avocado in a shake is great. And then
a nice creaminess.
Yes. And then there's coconut oil, which is really nice in a shake, and it's caloric. And it's a saturated fat, so some people are thinking, oh, that's going to go clog my arteries. But really, there's very little evidence that that's the case.
Exactly. I will also gear the patient towards, if they're always eating chicken breast, I will say, hey, how about the leg? Did you know that the dark meat has more nutrition, such as zinc, selenium, and iron? And hey, guess what? It also has additional calories that you need.
Right.
So, again, nutritionally good, dense food, and you've got more calories, too. And I remind people, rather than always opting for sirloin, you could try a ribeye or a skirt steak. Always make sure that you're getting grass-fed. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't even have to say that anymore. Just
I had
make
one
that
last
assumption.
Night. I had one last night.
Yeah,
it was great.
And,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when you have something like that, you're also getting more calories that way, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
you don't have to eat dry steamed vegetables with a little salt and pepper. How about a nice pat of grass-fed butter, pasture butter, organic butter, or a drizzle of olive oil?
Yes.
Or really, we're adding calories. This is the way to put on weight, healthy weight.
Sprinkle some nuts on your salad or on your side of vegetables. That's going to add some calories. Nut
and
snacks.
Because we're adding calories in the form of proteins and fats, we're not adding fat to our body for the weight that we're trying to gain. You see?
Right.
And muscle is more dense. Muscle weighs more than fat because of its density. So even building more lean mass, and this is so important, especially as we get older. And Michael, who's 72, we want to make sure, because he's so thin, that he's not becoming sarcopenic.
Sarcopenia is the word for the fact that past the age of 50, you generally lose 10% per decade of your lean body mass. And that accumulates. And that's a tendency we try to fight. One of the factors that I'll look at on the medical end is I'll look at men's testosterone and DHEA. And many of the men who are getting really feeble and thin and can't hold weight on, they have sarcopenia due to hypogonadism, and they could use a little testosterone to rebuild some of the muscle. So that would be good. DHEA, in some cases, is more convenient because it'd be taken over the counter, but it's not the perfect substitute for a prescription of testosterone. And, we'll look for malabsorption. A guy who's so skinny, we saw a gentleman like that, and we're running a test now for celiac disease because he had multiple, he's skinny and he had multiple nutritional deficiencies, terrible B12, terrible iron, terrible D. And, he's trying to eat healthy, but it doesn't seem to be getting through to his system, possibly because of some malabsorption.
Another thing that's important to note is we now know, in the most recent scientific literature, I'm talking about this year, is that a man of 72 or a woman of 72 needs double the RDA for protein than a man or woman in their 30s.
Mm-hmm. And we've been saying the opposite. We've been saying, you got to be careful because, it could mess up your kidneys and you don't need as much protein because you're older and you're not as active. And it turns out that your efficiency at absorbing, utilizing the protein goes down and your requirements actually go up.
Right, right. And eating this additional protein does not cause kidney disease.
Right.
That's a myth that's just not going to die. It's those with already who will either have chronic kidney disease, end-stage renal failure, people who are about ready to go on dialysis next month.
Yep.
These are the people where we have to monitor the amount of protein. And they're not put on a low-protein diet either. They're put on a moderate protein diet.
Because what's the good of saving their kidneys
What's
the good of saving their kidneys if the person completely wastes away and, becomes debilitated?
Exactly.
That's not good either, right?
Right.
Okay. All right.
All right, Michael, best of luck.
Yes, good discussion. We devote a little more time to that because it brought up a lot of issues. So we have another question?
Yes, we do, from Isabel. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I have a couple of questions about Florastor, the good yeast, or otherwise known as Saccharomyces boulardii. She asks, if one is not currently taking antibiotics, is it still a good idea to take a daily dose of Florastor? Well,
that's a good question.
It's a helpful yeast if you have a tendency, for example, for having irritable bowel syndrome, leaning more towards diarrhea or soft stool or something like that, it may be helpful. And if you are taking it while you're taking a course of antibiotics, you want to make sure that you take the Florastor at least 2 hours away from the antibiotic.
I mean, in other words, is Florastor a good routine daily probiotic? And I think we reserve Florastor for people who are having diarrhea, or for people who have documented candida, or for people who have C. difficile infections. Of interest is, and I'm going to actually share this in a article that I'm going to write for the newsletter, is I recently submitted my stool sample to UBIOME. And, you know, just kind of like, you know, to see what's going on in my body and maybe report on it. Sort of like, you know, they're like travel reporters, like, let me go to Zanzibar and I'll tell you what it's like. You know, and while you're sitting home in your easy chair, you can read about it. So, so I did it, and I was kind of surprised by the results. The results showed that I had Clostridia, but not Clostridium difficile, and it's normal to have Clostridia. And Clostridia is actually not bad to have. It's just the difficile part is not good.
Right.
So
the genus is okay. It's the species.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, the bottom line is very complicated, and I'll share some of my insights on that in a future newsletter article. So we have time for one more question.
Yeah. Isabel actually has a second question about Florastor. If one has a urinary tract infection, should Florastor be avoided since it is a yeast? No, Isabel, a UTI is not caused by a yeast. It's more often caused by E. coli, isn't it, Dr. Hoffman?
Yeah, or other bacteria. However, it is possible to have a vaginal yeast infection and to experience some urethral irritation, or even that may render you more susceptible to a UTI. They sometimes go hand in hand. So, you know, I guess one question that we could skirt it around is, if you take antibiotics, should you take Florastor as an insurance policy against developing C. difficile? And the answer is, some studies suggest there's some protection. Most studies are just concentrating on just taking a probiotic, you know, with lactobacillus. And so one might, especially if one has had a prior history of C. difficile, when you're taking antibiotics, take both Florastor and a probiotic like Dr. Ahira's. You know, I recently did an unusual podcast. I did a podcast with an author who wrote a definitive biography of Eli Metchnikoff. And Eli Metchnikoff was a guy who won the Nobel Prize in 1904 for some very basic discoveries about our immune system, about how white blood cells help defend the body. But he also was a real proponent of probiotic yogurt. He believed that yogurt was kind of an elixir that would restore intestinal balance, that could have an anti-aging and disease-protective effect. And what was interesting is that he literally triggered a yogurt frenzy in 1904.
Wow.
When he reported that yogurt contained beneficial microorganisms. And before his popularization of yogurt was used a lot in, you know, Bulgaria, certain parts of the Caucasus Mountains. You know, there's sort of an esoteric primitive food. You know, it was like a primitive way of preserving milk and helping it, rendering it more digestible. But live cultures were not popular in the major capitals of Europe and in the United States. And, you know, it really is an example of, you know, sort of medical journalism, because he gave a very sober lecture, you know, at the Sorbonne, you know, some like bastion of medical thought in the early 1900s. And there were reporters in the audience, and the reporters rushed out and sent telegraphs, you know, to their bureaus across the world saying that this brilliant scientist has advocated yogurt as an anti-aging therapy. And he really wasn't, you know, a firebrand, and he was totally not about commercializing it. Finally, he lent his name to a certain brand of yogurt because he wanted to make sure that people were getting good quality yogurt. You know, it's an interesting example how these fads get started. You know, he's sort of like, it's almost like, you know, when you hear something on, as heard on Dr. Oz, didn't have the internet, they didn't have TV, but they had these lecture halls and they had the telegraph. And so somehow that went viral in 1904. And, you know, and then doctors said, oh, that's just nonsense. That's just superstitious nonsense. Come on, you know, like, beneficial bacteria? Come on. The bald bacteria, or we want to sanitize everything, you know, kill off all the bad bugs. And now, it's over 100 years later, he died in 1916, it's a centennial. Everything's come full circle, and now we pay respect to the notion of endotoxins and auto-intoxication and the microbiome, you know, just like he, you know, he's a visionary. He really predicted that over 100 years ago.
Wow.
So, it's, you know, I love the history of medicine because it also teaches us that, and by the way, he was ridiculed at the time, and it really teaches us that even unpopular theories, you have to sometimes, give credence to unpopular theories because just as Dr. Atkins was reviled, you know, for his views, he may go down in history. He's already, I think, history is being rewritten, that he was an iconoclast and a medical pioneer, and really heroically determined in the face of really bitter criticism. I mean, you remember those days when they just said he was just a total quack.
Oh, I know. We were all having to carry our, you know, our swords and our... Gosh, always in defensive mode,
yeah.
I should say. Right, right.
And, you know, with liquors of backlash today, as we read articles that say saturated fat is bad, and we see articles saying pasta is good. But we'll address those in, I think you're going to tackle that in a future article or potentially one of your podcasts, and I will do so as well. So stay tuned. Lots of content available free. It's at drhoffman.com, or you can use iTunes or Stitcher to subscribe. And we love to provide you with content. It's free, it's available, but to help underwrite the costs that are associated with production of these podcasts, we simply ask that you go to drhoffman.com or hoffmancenter.com and peruse our store. It's the very self-same dispensary that our patients use, and you have access to many of the fine supplements that we select and carefully curate on behalf of our patients. And you'll get the highest quality supplements, often supplements that are not available in health food stores, available only to physicians, at reasonable prices. We have price match guarantee, so if you see a product there and you think that the price is out of line with where you can get somewhere else, we'll match the price, and we'll send the product to you. So check it out, thereby ensuring a continued flow of free information as well as underwriting your own health with high-quality supplements. Thank you, Layla, for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
Radio program at AOL.com is the place to send your questions. We'll answer as many as we can next week. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.